Last March, not 2 weeks before the COVID shutdown, I traveled to Toronto to attend the funeral of my dear friend and longtime director of music at the Church of the Redeemer, John Campbell. As I ascended the front steps of the church into the foyer, a tall man nearby, clearly at home in the space, did a double take and exclaimed, "Ansley!" Took me a moment, but only a moment, to place him. This was James, and we had journeyed together for a short time before I left the Redeemer in 2000. In just those few moments we had together, he was radiant, enthusiastic, and confident. On my return to Victoria, I received from him the following email, which I have his permission to share, with just a few tweaks to identifying factors. "Ansley, what an exquisite moment it was to see you after so many years, however briefly, though I wish it were not on such a terribly sad day for the Redeemer communities. You would not likely know that John was the original inspiration for my mostly successful 20-year career as a case manager. I was so happy to be able to tell you that things have worked out for me in ways that I could never have imagined when I met you some 21 years ago. At that time, I was utterly broken. My shattered heart was held together by duct tape and string. You were one of the first in a long list of kind and loving people who interceded on my behalf. I will never be able to thank you enough for your wisdom, kindness, and patience. While I do not remember the details, note to reader, neither do I have a memory of sitting in your office one day and you spoke of salvation. Recently, following a year of unbelievable, life-changing events, my counselor of more than 25 years opined that perhaps I have now found redemption. Let there be no doubt. My heart has healed and I feel whole. I have an embarrassingly long list of things to be grateful for. And while I do not always pay attention, I know, as sure as I know my name, that God walks with me every step of the way. While I saw fit to leave the Redeemer for a time, it eventually found me once more and welcomed me home. Perhaps it was kismet or irony, or as the priest might I say, grace, that we met yesterday outside of the bathrooms. On a Saturday in December 1999, during my first year at the Redeemer, I think I'd been wrapping Redeemer Christmas gifts, you came up to me in almost the exact same spot and pressed a $100 bill into the palm of my hand. I have never forgotten that moment. Today, I made a $100 donation to Christ Church Cathedral as a way to pay that gift forward. Perhaps there is another person in your current orbit who was where I was then and could use $100. And it's signed James. I share James' story with you today at our Thanksgiving festival because it teaches us something of the grammar of gratitude. We know that the giving of thanks is at the very center of our spiritual and liturgical lives as Christians. After all, the Eucharist itself takes its name from the Greek word eucharistein, which means to give thanks. The Eucharistic prayer, often called the Great Thanksgiving, is at bottom an extended table grace. Blessing and honor and glory and thanksgiving be unto thee, said over bread and wine, and calling us to remembrance of so many things that God has done for us in our history, and especially in the ministry, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And we do this every week, not because God has some narcissistic need to keep hearing how great he is, but because this act of thanksgiving is supposed to embed in us and symbolize an attitude that we want to cultivate towards the whole of our life, a lens through which we are determined to view our reality. Thanksgiving. Now, you do realize that there are many other options. The truth is that life does not always deal us a good hand. And so how shall we respond? Shall I resent or envy the good fortune of others? Shall I blame those I consider responsible for my own circumstances? Shall I simply resign myself to them? Or shall I succumb to the vapors? Or wallow in self-pity? Take my marbles and go home? Or might I instead look for and find a shaft of light for which to give thanks? You know, I've got this dog. That dog can find the only sunbeam in my whole house, and she does it every time. What if I were to engage instead in the grammar of gratitude? Let's circle back to James. What can we learn about gratitude from the story he tells? First of all, there was a recognition of need. If you want to talk about being dealt a poor hand, James would have been your man. Often enough, it's our sense of need that lays the ground for gratitude. We realize that the salvation we need is not entirely in our own hand. We cannot heal ourselves. And into this need, there came a gift. Two gifts, really. The most important was the one James describes first, the support and the loving kindness of so many people around him. The money, $100, functioned as money always does, as a concrete indication, a sacrament, if you like, of the priorities and concerns of the people who bothered to learn his story. As they say, one of the ways to find out what really matters to people is to see how they spend their money. And that, by the way, is why stewardship or our charitable giving is a spiritual issue and not merely a financial one. Talking about money is absolutely the business of the clergy. Capacity to show gratitude is dependent upon our recognition that so very much of what we have, well, all of it to be precise, is gift. But what else? I exited James's life a year after I entered it. That was 20 years ago. And for all that time, he held a memory. For 20 years. And this too is part of the grammar of gratitude. We need to be mindful, to pay attention to the good things that come our way, and then to save them a place in our memory. There is a reason the church teaches us to pause every night before we sleep and to identify those moments and people that have been thankworthy. It's a practice which can make the difference between aging into grumpy bitterness or radiant joy. Next, there came a time when James put words to the gratitude he felt. His greeting to me outside the bathrooms at the Redeemer, the email he sent a day later. Gratitude needs to be expressed. It can't just be held forever in pectorum. It's a little like the incarnation. God knew he loved us, but in sending Jesus, he showed us up close and personal. He expressed that love. Perhaps for you, as for me, this is a challenge. There's so much for which I am grateful, and I feel it, I do, in my heart. But so far, my gratitude has done only half its work, which is to make me a better, happier, more radiant person. It's only once I express that gratitude that it completes its magic, which is the regeneration of thankworthy behavior. For when I know that something I have done has made a difference, I am motivated to repeat that behavior, like handing out $100 bills at Christmas. Come and see me. And finally, from James, we learn the power of, as he says, paying it forward. Not only did his gratitude encourage me to keep trying to be thoughtful and generous, he himself, when he was again able, reached out in kind, and he shared the fruits of that gratitude with a community which was completely unknown to him, 4,400 kilometers away, and thereby encouraging and equipping us to replicate that act, any act of kindness. Gratitude expressed and paid forward has that kind of power. So, on this Thanksgiving holiday, find something you are thankful for, commit it to memory, say thank you to someone who has done good to you, and go out and do likewise. For such is the grammar of gratitude. Amen.
Let us join in prayer to the one who walks with us through our days and seasons.